When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
21 of the last 22 times they scored. Here's Sims to throw in third down. Up the middle, touchdown, Bavaro. Mark Bavaro goes to one knee. Genuflex in prayer as a 13-yard throw over the middle answers the prayer for the Giants fan.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
24 hours ago, I wanna be sedated. So it's funny, every once in a while there is, it feels like promos plan out perfectly to what I want to talk about. And I wanted to get into Daniel Jones and the Giants a little bit, and there was a promo of Mark Bavaro. And I did see, again, another former teammate, another NFL player, another someone who, you know, has an opinion on Daniel Jones and the offensive line, out in his defense, saying the same stuff we've heard from a million different people, including Joe Shane, who said it during the first episode of Hard Knocks Offseason Edition, where he talked about even Patrick Mahomes couldn't win with that offensive line, which I find to be ridiculous. But hey, they are not alone in that thought, and now we find out Mr. Darren Waller, Mr. doesn't want to play for the Giants anymore, he's of that same opinion. And he had an up-close look at it last year for the first handful of games while Daniel Jones was healthy, that the offensive line made it impossible for Daniel Jones to play the quarterback position. So I think that is not true. I think it makes it more difficult, no doubt. I think Daniel Jones causes a lot of his problems and doesn't help his offensive line. And then other quarterbacks came in and actually played better than him, but that's fine. I think we all understand the Giants need to fix the offensive line. And that's why they've went out and got Van Roten here, who's coming off a great year with the Raiders and now is going to be added to this offensive line group. And, you know, it just speaks to the... I mean, I understand he's currently, you know, dealing with an injury. He's on the PUP list. But Evan Neal is a disaster. And, coming off his rookie year was so bad, but I think the Andrew Thomas and how he played his rookie year and the jumps he made in his second year to now where he's one of the best left tackles in the sport, I think we all just kind of assumed, all right, well, hey, same thing's going to happen with Evan Neal. And Evan Neal has been brutally bad when he's not injured. Brutally bad. And I think this is an important signing. And I think it's a signing that, you know, we talk about Brian Cashman a lot. Hey, yep. Oh, look at that. Fat boy worked at Brian Cashman in again. Yep, I did. We talk about Brian Cashman a lot in his unwillingness to move on. Right, from decisions he made, from trades he made, from guys he's paid, from people he's brought in. They've got extra rope. Hicks gets all this rope because he got a 7-year contract from Brian Cashman. They'll try this because he made the trade and you got to try it. And, you know, to the Mets' credit, as I try and work baseball into this conversation as well, Stearns hasn't shown that. Stearns brought in Hauser. Hey, Hauser's not pitching well enough in the rotation. He's gone to the bullpen. You know, they've had a little bit more accountability. And a little bit more of, hey, if you don't play well, you don't play, than the Yankees have had under Brian Cashman. I think that's fair. And to make this move, and now with Illuminaire and some of the different other pieces they've brought in, and hopefully he's fine just dealing with a bruised rib given to him by Dexter Lawrence, sexy Dexy. I think that there's a real chance that Evan Neal is going to be a backup player for this offensive line, which really speaks volumes to several different things. One, Joe Shane and his ability to not care about mistakes. I mean, you're talking about a 7th overall pick in the NFL draft. And, you know, it's funny because we talk about the busts at quarterback, right? And, oh, you can't draft. Oh, how could you do that? If he's, you know, you how many guys at the top of the draft are busts? You can find a bust at any position. Offensive linemen can be busts. Wide receivers can be busts. Running backs can be busts. Linebackers can be busts. Cornerbacks can be busts. Every position you can miss. There is no such thing as a can't miss. And Evan Neal proves that. And that is why I'm always for, I'd rather take my chance on being right, because you know what? They were right on Andrew Thomas. And he still was anchoring an offensive line that couldn't allow Daniel Jones to function. It didn't help the offensive line to a point where it didn't change anything. I'd rather take a draft pick where if he's right, if you're right on it, it changes your whole franchise. This is why I'm big on the quarterback position in the draft, because if you're right on the quarterback, sure, if you're wrong, it sets you back, no doubt. We've seen it time and time again. But if you're right, it can change your whole franchise. And that's why I was willing, as dopey as it was, to trade those two picks, which one turned out to be Thibodeau here, and we'll find out if him and Burns, I guess, are creating a little bit of a, you know, a good-natured competition, which is important. And hopefully, you know, with Bowen's defensive leadership, they'll actually care to get after the quarterback and use their pass rushers that either drafted or paid $30 million a year to actually use them to go after the quarterback instead of dropping into coverage the way Wink Martindale liked to do it. But that's why I wanted to trade those two draft picks for Russell Wilson, because I care about the quarterback position like an idiot. No, but I think this offensive line's obviously important, and they recognize it, and they're not going to allow. And I know it's sort of in case he never comes off the PUP list or he has injuries, but like the idea that they're continuing to make sure they bolster this offensive line, they understand what's going on with Daniel Jones. And if you look at what's gone on with Daniel Jones, yes, he needs an offensive line, no doubt, but he right now, and I don't take too much from practice. I don't. I try not to look too much into what's gone on at practice. I think the idea, this video I've seen from ML Football 100 times in Daniel Jones missing a screen pass is ridiculous, as I'll watch it again here. I'll give it one more click. Oh, yeah, a little motion across, motion back. Little quick little screen pass, overthrows it, hits the ground. Yeah, it's a terrible throw. It's a terrible throw, but it's practice. But it's getting to the point now where, I mean, they are seeing consistent, the word out of camp for Daniel Jones, and I hope Brett is listening or any other Daniel Jones defender, and I'm not out to kill Daniel Jones with this, but I do think it's worth noting as we start the football season tonight and talking a little football here on The Fan, that coming off his ACL, he's bound to be rusty, no doubt. And people are, you know, really rather impressed with how quickly he's been able to get back and have no real medical or you know, injury designation on him whatsoever, that he can go out there and be, you know, 100% and go through all the things a normal quarterback could do. But Connor Hughes, in particular, has talked about how off he looks and how constantly he is missing backs in the flat and wide receivers in short. Like some of the deep balls, like if you look at the highlights you have seen from Daniel Jones, the only ones that are positive are the deep throws. He is really struggling on backs out of the backfield. He's struggling on short passes. And, you know, I do think that the Giants need to prepare. And this was Connor Hughes' point about allowing Drew Lock to get first team reps. We all know what's going on with Daniel Jones, right? And we'll see if he's better than what he's showing right now. And I have confidence that he won't be missing every short wide receiver or back out of the backfield. But the fact of the matter is, forget all that. They absolutely need to be preparing other quarterbacks because of his injury because of his constant injuries, and the idea that, quite honestly, I don't know how long he's going to play. All right, if they start to lose, I don't think the Giants are going to want to take any kind of chance on Gary, unless he's going to go out there and play at a level that shows you something, even in losing. But like, Daniel Jones can't be allowed to get injured. It's not going to take much to take him off the field. And right now, it's, you saw it in the draft, the one, you know, you saw it in the Hard Knocks, where they tried desperately to move up and get a quarterback. You could see it on Dable's face. A lot of people, I've seen a couple stories now, they're reading it to Dable's face when Joe Shane says, all right, so, you know, we'll try and trade up, but if that doesn't happen, we'll go with Daniel Jones and try and get him a weapon. And you read into the facial expressions of Brian Dable on whether or not he's happy to have Daniel Jones. I think Brian Daboll probably wanted a brand new toy that he could coach up from the beginning. I'm sure that's what he wanted. I'm sure he wanted a young stud quarterback that he believed in that he could groom from his first snap in the NFL, as opposed to Daniel Jones, who was a couple of years in before Brian Daboll got here. Now, Brian Daboll got the best out of him, and I trust Brian Daboll and this coaching staff to help Daniel Jones along right now. And I think it's probably a little bit overblown with how poorly he's playing in practice. But at the same time, even if they know, if they see within a few weeks that he isn't progressing at the level they want and they don't want to pay him next year, they're going to take him off the field. Like, it only makes sense. I know they want to win football games, and that's why you have to get Locke ready. And that's why you should be giving him some legitimate first-team run here, because at any moment you could decide, hey, he's not it, this team's not it, we're not, you know, playing well, we're not winning, he's not playing well, and I can't afford, and this team can't afford, to have him injured when he gets injured constantly and put us in a position where we have to guarantee his contract next year. So while when I look at that Giant team, yeah, I like Burns and Thibodeau, edge rushing. I love Sexy Dexy in the middle. I love Okereke and McFadden. That front seven is a legit unit. It's a legit unit. And I think they've done a decent job with the offensive line and some of the people they brought in. We'll see if this new coach, I think they've been one of the more poorly coached teams at the position, as well as lack of talent. And hopefully this new coach, and hopefully the additions they've made should bolster this offensive line. And I think Neighbors is a game-breaking, big-time player. And I actually think Wandell Robinson is someone who's a little shifty and can make some plays, you know, now a second year out of that injury. And Hyatt is a guy who can, I don't know if he has the whole route tree. That's the word on him. And we'll see if he could just give you that speed and blow the top off the defense and set some other things up. I think there's a chance that if Daniel Jones is healthy and more accurate than he's been in practice here, that the passing game could be at least on some level significantly better than it's ever been with Daniel Jones. As long as he can block and all those wide receivers, you know, play to their skill set, and Brian Daboll calling plays for them, I think is a huge positive as well. I've talked about that, how happy I am Brian Daboll's decided to take over the play calling. But the really only talented unit that you know has legitimate players on it and that should be successful is that front seven. Other than that, you got an offensive line you're hoping gels, a wide receiver group you hope your quarterback can get the ball to, a running back who is not Saquon Barkley, a defensive backfield that's inexperienced and unproven. And right now, they have a lot to do. And this Giant team that, you know, I mean, do I have a feeling that they might not be as bad as people, and myself included, are saying? There's always that chance. And I think Daniel Jones has an opportunity to have a good passing game this year. But at the same time, I just don't know how he's going to play, having not played in a year, how he's going to be able to run off that knee, how much we have to worry about the neck every time he's tackled, let alone dealing with losing one of their real leaders in Saquon Barkley, the offensive line in flux still, with Evan Neal probably on his, you know, I mean, not unable to play, and who knows if he'll even be a tackle on this team. A wide receiver and crew that's young and inexperienced and hasn't really done anything with Daniel Jones. And a defensive backfield that is, I mean, when you know what rookie cornerback, you know what young cornerbacks do? They get beat. That's the NFL. So as gung-ho as I am about the New York Jets, I am very pessimistic about the New York Giants. But then again, the last time I was this pessimistic about the New York Giants, they won 9 games and went to the playoffs. So we'll see what Daniel Jones can be. But all reports from camp are he looks really bad. And we'll find out if he can turn that around. It's early. He's just getting under the back into the swing of things. The Hall of Fame game is tonight. Plenty of time for him to, you know, get things going. But he's got so much to go against. He's got to go against, and he's got everything working against him. He's got injuries working against him, makeshift, you know, a new offensive line trying to gel working against him, weapons that he's unfamiliar with for a lack of playing with them, really, to deal with, let alone perception, trying to justify his standing on the team, justify his contract. If not the Giants, who else does he have to try and impress with his play? There's a million things on the shoulders of Daniel Jones. And as a person, I believe he can handle it. As a player, I'm not so sure. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll come back. Take your phone calls all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show right here on The Fan.
Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL on CBS game every week on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, so sometimes Twitter is the best. I got a couple of guys sending me videos of Daniel Jones also having terrible deep throws. Because I said, I didn't say that all his deep throws are good. I'm saying any of the good ones we've seen have been deep throws. Any of the ones put out there by the Giants or whatever have been deep throws. I haven't seen a lot of intermediate throws as the highlights. But not to say every deep throw has been good, but a couple of guys have Queens get the money. I'll give him a dollar bills, y'all. Queens get the money. Sent me a couple of clips of Daniel Jones just dramatically overthrowing a wide open. It's such a bad throw. and then the other one is him, you know, Neighbors is open down the field and he underthrows him bad and it leads to an incompletion. But there's one where, let me see if I can watch it again and see. It looked like Wandell Robinson. But let me see it again. Who's this? I could have sworn I just had. Now I've lost the videos. I don't know what happened to it. But, oh, here it is, yeah. Let me see. Third down, streaking wide open down the field. He overthrows him by 10 yards. Oh, my God. I know it's just practice, but, man, he apparently looks really, really bad in camp. Oh, my God, the Giants. I hope you all enjoyed winning those meaningless games at the end of the year. I hope you really had a lot of fun beating New England. Do you even remember the score? Does it matter? I hope we all enjoyed it. Now, I know apparently he's doing bad at camp too, Drake May. And he's far behind Jacoby Brissett, and they're unhappy with him. That's what I saw in some article I read, that they were hoping to, you know, give him more first-team looks, but he hasn't earned them yet. So a bust is possible no matter where, no doubt. But I hope we're all happy winning those games at the end of the year. And giving us one more year of This Is the Year of Daniel Jones. Can't wait. Rocco in Saratoga. What's up, my man, Rocco?
Hey, C-Mac. How you doing?
Oh, what's good, up, good, Rocco? Good. How's the toga doing in this busy month for you?
Oh, yeah. Hey, you know, the ponies are here, so we're rocking it. We're going out every night, you know, just doing a little shimmy shimmy. My girl from North Carolina is up here, the green-eyed beauty.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is nice, Chris. It's living large, like Rami said. I'm doing fantastic.
Oh, well, fantastic. Great. Good for you. Look at you. Who's got it better than you,
Rami? I'm doing good, too. So don't only pin it on me, Chris. Yeah, some people are living large and feeling fantastic. Hey, why not, right? What?
Hey, I wish
Daniel
I was
Jones
one of them.
Not feeling. Hey, Daniel Jones not feeling fantastic, obviously.
No, he's not.
No. Come on. Do you think it's his neck? It's still bothering him? He can't, you know, maybe he needs more time.
I don't know.
But, you know, and also he's ready to explode any time he gets hit. It could be all done. So, I don't know. Bring Drew Lock in. Let him get some more reps and everything. The kid didn't really get a chance to play in Denver. You had Sean Payton there. He was going to do it his way, you know? So, yeah, let's see what Drew Lock can do.
I mean, Drew Lock never played for. He was in Seattle last year. Peyton's only been one year, but he. Listen, I don't think Drew Lock is any really great quarterback. He had his moment last year in Seattle, won a big game, but I mean, we'll see. It's worth something. They brought him here. You might as well give him a couple of looks because honestly, like to me, the question is, how afraid are they that he's going to get hurt? Like, that's what we're going to see. Right now, it's the rust. Right now, it's the bad throws. Right now, it's and thank you for the call, Rocco. I appreciate it more than you'll ever know. But, the minute things go south, there's no reason to play him. So, I'm very hesitant. This whole year is based on Daniel Jones again. I'm so tired of this. That's really my main point. I'm just so tired of this. I am so tired of every single Giants season being about figuring out what Daniel Jones is, other than last year. Last year, we thought we had it figured out, and then he friggin' made us come back. Like, he was like, no, you guys haven't been questioning my job enough. Let me have a miserable six games and then get hurt so that everyone can have another wonder what Daniel Jones is year. I mean, it's every year. When you draft a quarterback like they did, you hope to have a year, maybe two, max, of finding out what your quarterback is. Then you get the answer. Good, bad, or indifferent, you get the answer. Daniel Jones has been this, you know, unbelievable, weird, you know, he's been in this holding pattern of figuring out who he is because he's played just well enough and done just enough but been crappy enough and been hurt enough where it's like, well, I don't know. What do you think of Daniel Jones? Like, I can't do this anymore. Eric and Ronkonkoma, what's up, Eric?
Hey, C-Mac, good morning.
Good morning.
For a second.
Yeah, please do. Oh.
Okay. I was just telling Rami. I'm a little curious about now. This is going to sound like hindsight, but it's not. But I'm a little curious about the setup of the Mets rotation for the next few days because they have Blackburn going against the Angels.
Yeah.
For the first game, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, all right, well, they're coming from Oakland. He knows Anaheim very well. Which, you know, I always wondered, I'm like, well, why would you want to pitch him against the division that he knows the most? Because they know him as well. And he pitched last Friday against Anaheim, which I thought, all right, so he's pitching out two games in a row against the same team. Mm-hmm. But he would have really been lined up to pitch yesterday. So, I don't know. It seems a little strange to me. Like, why would you want to throw him against the same team twice in a row? You know, and he gave up four runs against them last time, too. So, I don't know. Like I said, it sounds like hindsight, but... I mean,
well, so you wanted really to, you wanted to give Severino the extra day and throw him yesterday?
A couple more days, yeah. Why not? I mean,
and throw Blackburn yesterday because now they got a three game set against the Angels. Are you going to avoid him for 3 days now?
Blackburn would have pitched yesterday, and
that's
then
what you're
Severino
saying, yesterday.
Would start it off.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that. Right. I think they probably wanted Severino at home, where he's comfortable. But yeah, I don't think they're thinking along those lines. I think they're thinking of how it just works out best for them. I don't think they're focused on how he's. I hear what you're saying. It makes sense. Like what you're saying makes sense. All right, but I don't think that's as important as just setting up the rotation and everybody else and making sure people are on schedule. And I mean, I don't think they're taking it into consideration as much as you may say. But it does make sense.
Well,
the idea.
Well, one of the other reasons why I bring it up is because they made such a big deal about keeping Budo on schedule, right? They said that the other day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they're going to do that with one, why not do that with others? I mean,
yeah.
It's just, look, I know it sounds, again, I know it sounds silly.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, it's not that important.
He was on rotation to pitch yesterday, so.
Yeah. But who knows how his he might not have been able to have the bullpen day on the day he wanted because of the trade. Like, you don't, to say he was on rotation, his whole, everything got changed when he gets traded. I hear what you're saying. It would have been the fifth day, sure. And he's pitched his last start was against this very team, and he gave up a couple runs. That's all. It all makes sense. Like what you're saying is, if you could avoid that situation, why not? But we don't know all the different ramifications and all the different things that Mendy's dealing with and trying to get people. So it's just one of those minor things. You're not wrong, but there's probably a million different reasons why they went the way they went, and I don't think it matters all that much. Val in the Bronx, what's up, Val?
Brother Mac, how you been, man? How
good,
you doing?
Brother,
long time, no talk.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. What's going on?
I think you went on vacation, and then I just came back. Like, today was my first day back, so.
Oh, nice. Where'd you go?
Ocean City, Maryland.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, yeah. It's a yearly thing that me and the family do. As a matter of fact, we had a group that we usually go with. Shout out to the Macklins. They it had been a while since all of us were together like that down there. So this was like they call it the 15th year anniversary kind of thing. So it was nice. a good vacation. Very, very good vacation.
Good. I hope you're rested, relaxed, and ready to watch this Yankee team about to go on a tear.
Well, I'm happy, man. Like the Friday night, I was actually the Saturday night. The Friday night was when I heard about Chisholm.
Yeah.
And then the Saturday night was when everything started to go nicely. So, it was crazy because, Ocean City, Maryland is nothing but a bunch of Baltimore people. And I was walking around in my Yankee gear. I had old ladies looking at me funny and cross-eyed, bro, and walking up at me trying to start fights. But what I wanted to ask you about, though, right? So a couple of things Yankee-wise. The first one, as far as the relievers and stuff like that, any word on, Ian Hamilton and Trevino and I know they said something about Efros, but anything about is Hamilton coming back at all this year? Yeah. Or are we, that's...
I think he's a few weeks away. Right. Yeah, Hamilton's definitely coming back. He's a few weeks away. Efros is the one who's been pitching in the minor leagues. I don't know about his last few outings, but his first couple outings went miserably, so I think they're going to give him some time.
Okay.
And I've heard Trevino's a while away still, so I mean they might be. I mean Trevino might be a month away or so, but they all three of those, I believe, certainly Efros and Hamilton are on the way back. I believe Trevino is too, but he's further away. But you could be looking about in the next couple of weeks to get hopefully both of those guys back.
All right, and then the next question I wanted, because this is the next thing with Cashman. I know, there are a lot of people saying it was lackluster with the trade deadline and everything. I'm happy that we actually got Chisholm. As far as the other guys,
what made you happy? Was it the four home runs? What exactly made you happy they got Chisholm?
Even before the homers, because I remember that was the name that we were talking about before.
No doubt,
so I was just happy that they did the deal. And the fact that he's doing what he's doing now is even better. But what I was wondering about is, I know Cashman likes the reclamation thing. I'm kind of skittish on the rules right now with the way that the deadlines work now. The fact that the trade deadline is over, is the waiver wire still open? Or is there still a chance that there's going to be somebody that he, reclaims as far as maybe that bat that we were kind of hoping for, something like that, somebody that maybe he tries to turn into a Maybin or something like that, or a Tauchman or something like that?
No.
Is there any word on anything like that?
Waiver wire is no longer a thing. It's there's no other additions to this team. If people are cut,
so this is it.
That's it. Yeah, that's it.
Right. Even if somebody else drops somebody in DFA, if another team DFA's somebody, there's no way that guy.
Yeah, I think you can. I still think you can add people, but it's not like where you can still make trades through the waiver wire the way they did. The Astros did with Verlander that year. That kind of thing is dead. But yeah, if people just get designated for assignment, I believe that you could still pick them up at this point. Yeah.
And considering how the market worked out this year, are there any big names that were big salaries that anybody just said, I can't afford this for the rest of the year and dropped off? Or you don't know anything about that?
Yeah, I don't know. This is the team, Bell. This is the team.
All right. I mean, I'm happy with that too.
Doesn't sound like it.
The spark. I feel like because I feel like in a weird way, and I don't want to overstate it, but somehow these first couple of games, these first few days, these last six, are giving me almost David Justice vibes, as far as Chisholm is concerned.
Yeah.
I don't want to overstate it, like I said. I'm giving it a moment to let it play out, but that's what I'm thinking. That year, Justice came out of nowhere. They got him.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a big name, but they got him, and all of a sudden, they got what they needed. I'm hoping that Chisholm could be like that.
Yeah. No,
you know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
No, I'm saying, I don't remember the instant impact with Justice, but over time, and then certainly in the playoffs, he was carrying them. So he's the best the trade deadline acquisition I can remember. I mean, he changed that 2000 season.
I don't know. Waldman and them were saying it yesterday. I don't think anybody has had that kind of instant impact that he has had so far in the trade. I mean, the question is whether or not it's sustainable. But the kid is a player. You know what I mean?
No doubt.
So whatever he gives, I'm taking. It's good to hear from to talk to you again. It's been a minute. I'm gonna be back up with you on the regular now. We back in the city.
All right,
be back watching and listening. So
all right, man.
Be easy, Mac. I'll catch up with you.
All right, thank you, buddy. Take care. Nice trip to Ocean City, Maryland. I'm going to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina on my way down to Disney again in mid-August. God knows what I'm doing. But I'll be in, try and play some golf in Myrtle Beach maybe. That'd be nice. But yes, vacations are nice. We need them. You need to take a break every once in a while, Val. But yeah, but you've come back to a much better team. And he's had an instant impact. No, there's no doubt. Even Justice didn't have this instant of an impact. Rizzo, I know, dominated a Marlins series. It wasn't all these home runs like this, but his ability to run, his athleticism, it brings some of the different things the team needs. It's created a spark. Everything about him, the massive home run. I mean, of all the four home runs, the one that, you know, that gave them the lead the other day was a huge, huge home run. He's just been terrific. And right now they just feel different. And even getting DJ LeMahieu into the mix, like, it's just what we've seen over the last couple of days. They're getting back to what they were. They still lead Major League Baseball in runs scored. They've been, you know, a huge, in a huge funk, but it seems like they've kind of turned the corner here, and they're heading home. And this is an important stretch. It feels like right now is the time to make hay while Baltimore is dealing. They got another injury in yesterday, right? What's his name? Westberg broke his hand. So they're dealing with a bunch of injuries. The Red Sox haven't played as well since losing to the Yankees. And right now, or really since the All-Star break, the Red Sox haven't played that well. Right now is the time to make up ground. And this is an important stretch. And this is an important, you know, series. We got to see. Hopefully, we're going to get Gerrit Cole to come back and pitch into the series. He's had a bullpen yesterday, and he's going to throw another bullpen on Friday. And then I would hope you see him on Sunday after dealing with a stomach bug and having some general soreness. But, I mean, watching this team yesterday, that was watching DJ, because that's, you want to talk about a hitter. Like, let's talk about DJ for a second here. Because he's been terrible this year, right? We all know it. He's been terrible since getting, you know, he had a great spring training. Everybody was raving about him. Every time Boone opened up his mouth, he was talking about it's so nice to see DJ with explosive swings again, and the ball's jumping off his bat, and DJ looks the best he's looked in 2 years, and DJ's feeling the best he's felt in 2 years, the foot injury's behind him and all this stuff. And then he fouls one off his foot. It was the worst possible injury. I would have had almost anything. Dislocated shoulder, broken collarbone, torn hamstring, almost anything would have made me feel better than a foot, because we saw what he was when he was struggling with a foot injury. So that obviously hampered his season. He comes back, and he's been dreadful. And I've been screaming to cut him, because I wanted to send the message that needs to be sent, that hopefully they got now. I don't, you know, they're winning, so the message needs to be sent less. But the idea of, if you don't play well, then you don't play. And, you know, BT mentioned it in his interview with Brian Cashman, talking about the rope that certain guys have gotten, the rope that Hicks got, the rope that Gallo got. Well, and the response from Brian Cashman was, in response to those two guys, well, you know, it depends on who we had to replace those guys at the time and our ability to find guys to replace those guys. Well, DJ LeMahieu doesn't have to play. You've got Gleyber Torres at second. You've got, obviously, Jazz Chisholm at third. And you've even got Oswaldo Cabrera, who's been far better. So there's no reason that DJ has to play anymore. And the Yankees are still playing him, and they're playing him for one reason only. Because if he is the player that won them the game yesterday with a grand slam home run and a double in the gap opposite field, which is that's even more impressive for me, or at least, you know, I shouldn't say impressive. The grand slam is very impressive. But the double is a DJ LeMahieu hit. That fastball in the outside corner ripped up the gap. That's DJ LeMahieu at his best. And the reason they play him is because as a good Oswaldo Cabrera at his best is a nice little player who might be able to create some spark for you, switch hitter, nice little player. DJ LeMahieu at his best is a batting champion and a third finalist for the MVP. That's the difference. The difference is DJ LeMahieu is a proven player in this league, and if they ever were to get him going, it's a game changer. And that's why he still gets options. It's not because they don't have better they don't have anybody to replace him. Yeah, they went out and traded for Chisholm, and he's going to, you know, he's the starting third baseman now. So DJ is going to have to find time to do the first or second at the expense of Gleyber or Ben Rice, because it's not going to be at the expense of Jazz Chisholm right now, I'll tell you that. But if DJ LeMahieu, like if you look at this lineup now, and we talked about how the trade deadline only does so much. You needed Verdugo, he's hitting. You needed Gleyber, he's hitting. You needed Volpe, he's hitting. You needed those guys to step up and play much better and more like they did to start the season. Otherwise, there were no trades to go out there and fix it, and they only got one offensive player in Chisholm. They needed those answers to be on the affirmative. And now if you're going to get DJ LeMahieu, which, by the way, it's one game. I'm not saying here he comes. He's going to be hot as a pistol for the next. Like, I have no idea. He might never get a hit again. But if he is that player and you can throw him into the mix, and if you say there's no room for him, this was his role when he was first signed by the New York Yankees. When they first signed him in 2019, he was an extra piece. They had Gleyber, they had Andujar. They had Gio Urshela. They didn't need another infielder. They did it because he was going to be this utility infielder who went and played a little bit of everywhere. And that's what he can be now. But if he's going to be someone who has at-bats like that, if he's going to be someone who's hit with runners in scoring position, how he has historically in his career, if he's going to be DJ LeMahieu, 360 on base percentage, 820 OPS, that's a game-changing player for this lineup. And we saw it in one game. DJ LeMahieu 6, Philadelphia Phillies 5. And then you get Clay Holmes at the end of the game. Well, and I know that's a talking point, and we can talk about it next right here on The Fan, 888-808-1019. You heard Brian Cashman talk about it with BT and Sal. You've heard the manager talk about Clay Holmes. You heard the captain talk about Clay Holmes. He is their closer. He came in yesterday, and closed the game out. Yes, I know everyone. I got a couple of tweets about how I was talking about the soft contact of the day before and a couple of hard hit balls yesterday. Bottom line is, that's a bandbox of a ballpark. He got a fly ball. He got a double play. And he's a ground ball pitcher. Getting double plays is what he should be doing. And he got Harper, who was, 0 for 17 in the series, you told me, Rami? 0 for 14 in the series. Got him to hit into a double play and the game. Yankee victory. A sweep. 5 in a row. And we can put behind us. I don't know what they'll be moving forward. I'm not saying they're going to be the same team they were 2.5 weeks ago, for the first 2.5 months, But they are not going to be the absolute garbage hot mess that they were for a month and a half. They are not going to be that team. They've got Juan Soto and Judge. And that's the other thing about this series. Juan Soto and Judge didn't really do that much damage. The last two games in particular didn't do anything. They're scoring runs, winning games over the last couple here without Judge doing anything.
They scored 13 runs, and they drove in zero of them in the last two games.
The last two games, Yankees scored 13 runs, Judge and Soto drove in zero. Judge struck out 4 times yesterday, and they still won a game against the Phillies on the road. Those are positive turning points. Those are very positive. What we've seen from Rodon, extremely positive. What you saw yesterday from DJ LeMahieu, positive. What you've seen from this offense since the Mets series and what they've done in Boston and Philadelphia, huge positive. Jazz Chisholm, clearly a huge positive. And winning games without getting any run production from Soto and Judge is an enormous positive and something that felt impossible just a few weeks ago. 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you. 4 hours down. It's flown by. 4 hours down. One more to go on our five-hour midnight ride. I got you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. McMonagle with you. Ray, I see you. We're going to take your call right on the other side. Talking Yankee baseball. We'll talk Mets as well. We've spent a lot of time on the Mets. Talked a lot about Severino and his performance yesterday and how I'm concerned about his inning limits. I was listening to Evan's podcast, and he's right. I was thinking about it the other day. When we talk about Luis Gil and, oh, the innings and who knows what he's going to have to do in the bullpen, we don't really mention Luis Severino, but the guy has barely pitched in 2019. He's already thrown more innings than he has in the last 6 years, already more starts than he has in the last 6 years. And I'm not saying that's the reason why he was hit up in the third inning, but it's something the Mets need to be aware of and talk about their offense and how important their offense is. And while I still believe in it, clearly, if it weren't since the All-Star break, you take away two big run production games, the second game against the Yankees and the first game against Minnesota, you take those games out, this offense has been wildly inconsistent since the All-Star break. After killing it for a month and a half and thrusting them right back into the wild card spot, the offense here has done really nothing much since the All-Star break, and now they are a half a game out of a wild card spot. And they have work to do in a very jumbled up, very hot NL wildcard. 888-808-1019. So baseball, when we get back for the last hour, we spent a lot on football. You can always call me about Daniel Jones, Aaron Rodgers, and the Jets and Giants, as tonight is the Hall of Fame game. All on the table for one last hour until the warm-up show. McMonagle here with you. We'll be right back.